Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for tuning in today to listen to another episode of the Dr. Hank Show. And it's all about emotional intelligence. Well, today it's all about mediation and emotional intelligence. So if those of you that tune in to hear how mediation ties to emotional intelligence, you're in for a treat because we have a great guest, Sharon Orr. And she'll be with us shortly. But first, let me just kind of tell you a little bit about the show. The show is, the show has been around probably for about 6 or 8 years, and we felt a need to get emotional intelligence out to the broad community at large and how emotional intelligence helps us to be effective in what we do on a day-to-day basis. So with that in mind, we invite guests to come on and share their thoughts or share their knowledge or share information on how what they do ties to emotional intelligence. One of our partners, if you will, is an organization called NAFCM, which stands for NAFCM, or National Association for Community Mediation. And of course, Sharon's going to tell you all about that. But what I wanted to do real quick was just to let you know that this is also a call-in show. That is, we invite our listeners to call in and share their thoughts and talk to either our guest or me, or pose questions or make comments or take an opposite position on something that we might be talking about. So if you're feeling up to it and you're all charged and ready to go, well, this is the place to be. The phone number, 929-477-1423. That's 929-477-1423. And when you call the number, as soon as you're answered, you will be live. So be prepared to either ask your questions or make your comments or share your thoughts, because we want to hear from you. Because one of the things that I found out is that we're not all knowing, almost all knowing, but not quite all-knowing. So we want to hear from you. We want to hear your thoughts as well. So our guest today, as I mentioned, is going to be Sharon Orr. And she's going to be, well, let me just kind of throw this out. Many of us from time to time play in our sandbox. Some of us play well with others, and some of us don't play well with others. Well, Sharon's going to help us to understand and share a tool with us on how we can, well, work as well as play well with others. So good morning, Sharon. Are you there?
Good morning, Dr. Hank. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Fantastic, fantastic. First, let me apologize for last week. We won't go into that, but let me apologize for last week. So, but you're here this week, and you're going to help us to understand how to play well with others. That's an interesting topic, and I can't wait. I can't wait to hear about that. However, but before we get started, Sharon, I'm going to ask you to maybe just tell our listening audience a little bit about Sharon Amour. Can I say Amour, or how do you pronounce the last name?
Well, I always enjoy it when people pronounce it that way because it's always a good sentiment. But it's pronounced Armour.
Armour. Okay. Armour. Well, Sharon, Armour. Welcome. Thank you. So tell us a little bit about Sharon.
Well, I've been living and working in the Boston, metropolitan Boston area for pretty much all of my adult working life. And I've mm-hmm. worked in areas dealing with people, organizations, and things dealing with people who deliver services. And about 10 years ago, I started being interested in mediation, and I trained to become a trained mediator about 10 years ago with a wonderful community mediation program called Metropolitan Mediation Services. And mm-hmm. it has been an important part of my work for the past 10 years. And I trained with Metropolitan Mediation Services, and I work quite a bit through them. They are a member organization of NAFCOM.
Okay.
And between MMS and NAFCOM, they help me keep my mediation skills sharp and current. And it's a wonderful resource. Both of them have been for me to help me do my work.
Great, great, great. Well, it's certainly a pleasure to have you with us, because not only are you going to share a little bit about how to work well with others, what I'm interested in is the big M and the little M. So before we end the show today, you're going to tell me a little bit about the big M as it relates to mediation and the little M, okay? How's that?
Okay, sure.
Okay, good, good. And, you know, we have what we call sometimes a lead-in or a teaser sentence, because people go, well, why should I listen to that show today, you know? I'm going to be eating lunch with Charlie. I'm going to be eating lunch with Susan or whatever. And so what the teaser sentence is, what we want people to kind of think about why they should be listening, is that mediation is an underdeveloped resource that strengthens your community in ways you may not realize. And so you're going to help us to understand, or maybe realize, how that might strengthen our community. Is that a part of what you're going to share with us today also?
Well, yeah, that's one of the things I think people don't always realize, how strong our communities are and the resources that we have in them. And mediation is part of that, whether we use it in a formal structure where we mm-hmm. enter, garner the resources of a formally trained mediator, and we enter into a formal mediation process. That's the big M that I describe. Or we deal with issues that we get the help of a trusted individual in our community to mm-hmm. help resolve it. If you think about it, on any given week, we interact with dozens to hundreds of people on large and small issues. And sometimes those don't always work out the best way for everybody involved.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah. So we may, look to someone else to help us figure out the solution to it, either a trusted authority in our church or school, or we go through the business manager or, some government organization up through courts to help
mm-hmm,
figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Or we contact our local mediation program, and there's lots of wonderful community mediation programs across the country that NAFCOM helps pull together, and have our own little community as well.
Okay. Let's just kind of start at the beginning. Let's say that, I move into a community and I really don't know any people there, and don't know the HOA, but they have some rules and stuff like that. But we're just going to call this a community at large. Where does mediation fit into my world or my community or world, however you might term that? Where does mediation fit in there?
Well, the definition of community can vary. Most people think a geographic location, But for me, I am active in the community that is my neighborhood. I am active in the community that deals with the work matter that my job entails. I'm involved in community arts that may range broader than my geographic location. But it brings together a lot of people who are interested in a same issue or skill or, you know, work product or program or project like that. So like I said, people encounter folks throughout their day and throughout their week on any number of levels where, you know, you're working together to come to some, you know, end. So when that doesn't work out right, that's when, you know, you may work individually to figure it out, or you may find someone else in your community who can help you figure out how to resolve your situation. It may be the manager of the store. It may be a clergy at your local church. It may be a counselor or principal at the school, all sorts of different resources that you may have. And trained mediators and a mediation organization is always around in most communities that can help out with this.
Well, you know, one of the things I appreciate what you just kind of shared was that community in and of itself, let's say it this way. We have to define what we mean by the term community, because what you just shared, what I thought about was the onion ring or the onion concept, where, you know, there are many, many different layers to the onion. You can peel one off. And so if we look at communities from that standpoint, you know, each layer of the onion could be a community. And on a broad sense, we can have, you know, the immediate community, you know, like in developments now, they have development one, that's a community. And then there's development two, that's a community. Development three is a community. But the whole major development could be another community. Then there's a city in which that community sits, and on. And so that's what I'm beginning to look at now when I'm thinking community. We have to kind of define what we're talking about, not you or me, but when a party is talking about mediation or within a community, what community are they referencing? What is it that they're looking at? Or at least that's what sort of just flashed in my head. You know, I have bright moments of flash, sometimes dull moments of flash, but I have flashes anyway, Sharon. So
flashes are good. I love flashes.
Sometimes they flash very brightly, and it's like, oh, I can see clearly now. And then other times, you know, it flashes dark lights, and it's like, man, now I'm really confused. But anyway, yes. So why and when would I seek out, let's say, mediation? I'm just thinking from a community standpoint, or we can just go just in general, but why and when or when should I seek out mediation? There's other resources. Why mediation?
Well, let's look at the when part of that. You might want to seek out mediation when your normal steps or process for resolving an issue isn't quite working out. You know, people have varying, you know, I'm talking to you, you know for sure,
yes.
People have varying levels of emotional intelligence and how wide that can range.
Sure,
and
sure.
When you have any two or group of people trying to work something out, they can all be on different levels. They can all have different communication styles and things like that, that will make it very difficult to come to some resolution about something. Even if in your community you've stepped out to get additional help from someone in your community to resolve it, they may be a perfectly skilled, excellent person at the primary things that they do. They may have a certain amount of, you know, mediation skills to a varying degree, but they may not also be able to handle it either. Or they could feel not to be the appropriate person to handle it. either because they are too close to the issue themselves, or they may be closer or have a greater relationship with one or more people in the party. They may not be able to give a neutral or an unbiased participation in the resolution. That's a tough one. Doesn't mean anyone is any less willing to help. It just means they don't have the resources to do it. So a skilled trained mediator has lots of tools available to them and a good, strong process to help get past all of those issues.
So that may be
when you would, step out of, your local community or the people involved in the issue to reach out and get some more stronger established help to figure out a good resolution for it.
Yes, yes, okay. Because I'm just thinking, sometimes, I could have a vested interest and, boy, it would be tough for me to not want to be a part of that so that it comes out the way that I think that it should. But I have to be aware that if I'm a well-trained, good, responsible mediator, I should recuse myself or step back or say I'm not the person for some of the reasons that you just mentioned there. But that could be tough. I can see. Wow.
It can be very tough. I mean, a good example would be, some issue in a community that has varying neighbors working together on it that they might want to work with a responsible and trusted clergy member, to help figure it out. But there could be parties involved in that are not of that faith or do not belong to the congregation of that church that may not feel comfortable having that person work with them in an unbiased way.
Doesn't mean
that person isn't able to help work through it or anything. You just want everybody who's involved in working on the resolution to feel comfortable in the situation and feel like the person who's helping them is helping everyone as best they could without any preconceived notion or idea about how it can go along.
Got you. Well, you gave me the when, and let's talk about the why.
Well, the why can be, most people think about mediation when there's something that went wrong or something that needs to be fixed.
Right.
And that there's needs to be something to correct it, and it's differing decisions or differing ideas from the people involved as to how this should be done. And that is true. That's one of the, strong areas of mediation that happens. It's one of the subject areas or situations that come to mediation quite often. But also you could have situations where everybody is clear on the goal of what it is that they want to do, but people just have different ideas about how to get there. And they have difficulty in communicating about that or deciding which one to do. So a lot of times, a mediation situation is a good way to be able to get in, explore all the possibilities, and come up with a good path to move forward.
Right. That sounds like a really good why. Yeah, yes. Go ahead. Sorry.
Those are two very good ways of using mediation or coming to mediation. When you have something that you want to do,
And you either need
to move forward on it or you've hit a roadblock and you need to figure out how to get past that.
Okay. Well, we talked a little bit about where and the why and the when. Now we come down to what I would sometimes consider the tough part, and that what does a mediator really do? And there's a part two to this, and that is, what is it not? What is their role? Well, let's just deal with part one first. What does a mediator do? And then we'll come back and maybe look at what is it or is not their role. Okay?
Okay. Well, a mediator is kind of a variation or a different flavor of a facilitator, someone who's going to be there to help things get done or help things, you know, all of the parties involved work toward some common goal or work through some kind of issue. They are there to be an aid to getting the things done. So they are kind of neutral in terms of that. They don't bring forth any idea. They don't try and steer people to any one particular solution or not. They are there to help get the communication going. They are there to help or to establish an environment where everyone feels comfortable in that environment and in that space to be able to talk, bring their ideas forward, express their feelings, and also to be able to be receptive for what other people are saying and contributing to the situation. And with all of that in place, they can take what people bring to the session and try and help move it forward to a solution that everyone is comfortable with.
Okay. So that's a part of the what. I have a sort of like a bigger what, and that is maybe the action steps that a mediator might take to do that. In other words, I hear what they do, that big picture of what they do, but maybe it's how do they do it?
Okay. I can talk about how I do it.
Okay. Sharon Armour. This is the Sharon Armour way. Okay, got it.
Yeah. When I talk a lot with people about mediation and stuff, and we talk about, you know, we're neutral in it. We're a facilitator, and people often get confused that neutral does means, you know, you just kind of sit back and watch things go. I think it's a very active role. It is not inactive. Part of what we do. Part of what I do is try and work on that environment so that everybody feels comfortable. I try and work on having an environment that is fertile and balanced so that, you know, someone who may come into it feeling very strong or dominant does not override the whole situation, or someone coming into it who may not have felt like their voice has been heard or may not have felt comfortable in being able to put forth what they feel is right, can do that in a less stressful environment. They can feel free to articulate as well. And in my role, I can also try and help bring information together. We talked a little bit about people having varying levels or ways of communicating, different communication styles. You've all been in a situation where someone is speaking A and the person hearing it is hearing oranges. So a good thing that a mediator can do is help that information or the statements or the positions or the thoughts that people bring into it, be able to kind of reframe it and summarize it or articulate it in a way that everyone can hear it, not just the people who are listening to that person speak, but also that that person who spoke understands that they've been heard and that they've been understood.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to pause here just for a second because I'm going to ask, you know, since you've done this and you're speaking from experience, without calling any names or talking about a particular case, is there an example that you could maybe think back on that says, so when this happened, I did this, or when that happened, I did that, and that sort of thing? I'm hearing it, but I'm trying to see it also.
Well, you know, in 10 years, I have quite a few samples, but trying to pull one to mind right away, you're putting me on the spot here, Dr. Hank. I would say, you know, a situation where you may have a customer who is dealing with a business or a vendor who has they've entered, you know, this customer has entered into a contract with that vendor to mm-hmm. either deliver a service or to produce or they purchase an item that failed. A lot of times that customer might feel like they are fighting, you know, the, you know, gigando conglomerate, and they are being heard. And it's very easy for gigando conglomerate to come in with, you know, their manager's manager, and a phalanx of attorneys
That's right.
to deal with the situation. And the customer is just the customer who's sitting on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
It can feel like a very intimidating situation for that customer. But my role is to make sure that customer feels like they can say, this is what I thought was going to happen, and this is what I want to have happen. And to have me hear it, and also to have all of the members of the other party hear it and understand that that's the situation and take it into consideration and seriously.
Yeah.
And it
yeah.
also works the same way in the other way, too. The customer can also be able to hear the concerns or issues that the, you know, industry reps may feel like they have to tell you. Yes, we understand your piece of equipment failed, but it broke in shipping, and we feel like it's the responsibility of the shipping company to deal with this, you know, or things like that. Another more personal situation that people might feel, a good example is, say, you know, a parent may not go out and seek the services of a formal mediator to, you know, deal with two children who are quibbling over a toy, you know.
Right.
They're going to figure that out and deal with it. But the other end of the family scale is you could have several adult siblings who have to either sit down and work out a plan for dealing with being the caregiver for their elder parents,
mm-hmm.
or if the parent has passed, they have to sit down and work out what to do with the legacy that was left from the parent,
right,
the estate
right.
that may be present, that they have to deal with, you know, what do we do with the estate?
Yeah, that is I don't envy anyone that has to deal with those kinds of situations, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, having something written down, you know, pre-done, so to speak, kind of helps that process go a little smoother. But, yeah, I can see where there could be, you know, disputes that would easily happen in situations like that. They do,
mm-hmm.
yes. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
absolutely. Yeah. Okay. So I'm getting a much better picture now, and thanks for that, you know, for taking me to school 101 on the mediation side. I appreciate it, Sharon. Thank you. Now, going back to their role, the mediator's role, what is their role and what is not their role?
Well, their role is to, you know, help facilitate and present a good environment for people to work through their issues, kind of keep track of the issues that people play out, keep
okay.
note and reframe and summarize and keep focus on the things that are important for both parties or important to, you know, to be a part of whatever solution that can be possible. The mediator's role and the participant's role is not primarily to, you know, force a solution in any way, but to get people to be able to work together on one if they can come up with one. They don't direct. They don't offer, you know, suggestions or directions or solutions. I try very hard to listen to the participants and
okay.
what it is that they think is important. What little glimmer of a possible solution that they have. Hey, let's play out that thought. You know, this is something that you think might work. How do you think that can, you know, come to fruition? What does that mm-hmm. look like for you if that was, you know, the end goal that you would want, how do you think that would play out? You know, your role is to kind of work with that, because a lot of times people, you know, can't see the forest for the trees.
Right, right.
So you can kind of help people bring that out.
Well, what I was thinking about, the reason I was asking that is, you know, both parties may be, you know, looking at a situation and what they perceive to be, you know, satisfactory to them, you may see something different, you know. In other words, you may see where there could be a much better outcome or higher level outcome. Do you ever kind of walk them to that? In other words, you know, there could be more that could be gained by both parties if they stay in it a little bit longer, but they agree to settle for half of the orange rather than seeing how they can both have the whole orange. Do you kind of walk them up to the next level if that's there, or you allow them to be satisfied with whatever they come up with?
Yeah, you've touched on one of the challenges of being a mediator in these situations. Yeah. Well, first of all, I know I'm just as human as everyone else is. So I know I'm not an expert on how anyone should do anything. Mm-hmm. But the basic structure for mediation is, and the way I've been trained, is that any solutions that come out of it is self-determined by the participants. Not by me.
Okay.
I can sit and see all sorts of solutions or directions play out or not that I think should be there, but this mediation belongs to the participants. And what comes out of it is defined by them. And as long as I feel like I've presented an environment for everyone to be able to explore all of their possibilities and comfort, and that they have made the decisions that they've made fully confident that they can or cannot do it, or that it is or isn't within what they want to do,
mm-hmm.
then I have to honor that. I have to honor that. That is what they want to do, and I will honor what they want to do. There are certain, you know, caveats to that. You know, some mediators are mandated reporters and things like that, you know, so you don't want to see, you know, issues coming up that if you are a mandated reporter, you have to report, or you have to say, you know, you can't do this because it breaks the law or whatever. But you quite often see people take half the orange when, you know, they could quite get the whole orange if they wanted to. But
yeah,
it's their
yeah.
decision. It's their decision.
Okay, okay. So whatever they come up with, if both parties are happy or accept the solution, who be it for me to offer something else is what I'm hearing.
Correct.
Okay, okay. Well, I'd have to learn how to, as the saying goes, I'd have to learn how to bite my tongue then, or at least, you know, restrain from, you know, that offering piece, because sometimes that's one of the things that happen is that you, through your experience and through knowing what you know that probably there could be something better. But I'm glad that you're kind of staying with it and saying, no, the mediation itself belongs to the parties. I am the facilitator or the mediator of this. But the dispute or the mediation, whatever is being discussed, all of that belongs to the parties. I'm just making sure that it goes, that it's a balanced process. I'm going to use the term a balanced process just for the sake of discussion. Okay, okay.
You're also, you know, the extra step that kind of helps you with those ideas that you may come up with they don't see. And it's really hard for me to describe how you do that. But part of what we do is to help people look at all of their possibilities without suggesting what all of those possibilities are. If people come to the process with an open mind and the willingness to listen and think outside the box, a lot of times they do come to those ideas that, you know, you start out the mediation and you get there before they do. But sometimes in part of the discussion and, you know, people get moments of clarity just out of the discussion and thinking broadly and thinking clearly about what their possibilities and stuff are. They come to it. They come to it. So, you know, yeah, where there has been situations that, you know, I may have felt or I may have thought things would go a different way, and you can be very surprised and have things turn out very differently for you.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see that. Well, you know, let's say that, you know, I've gotten all of the background I know about the when, the where, the how, and some of the things to expect. So if I choose to try mediation, what is expected of me, the party that's coming to mediation? You're the mediator. What's your expectation of me, the party that's coming for the mediation? Or maybe it's what is my expectation of me? That's two different expectations. But
it's two different, yes, that can be two different expectations, and that happens every once in a while. What I would like to see people, you know, when I do mediations with Metropolitan Mediation Services, and also we do mediations, we are invited into the courts to offer mediation services to parties who bring small claims or landlord-tenant cases to the court. When we offer them there, or when people come to the community organization, the Community Mediation Center, it's voluntary. They're there because they want to resolve the situation. So that first step means that people are coming in with somewhat of an open mind to try and work on this issue, to try and talk it through, to try and work through it, and to come up with some solution. People will often come in having a solution in mind or having an idea of what should happen in mind. But what I would like to see and hope people that come into a mediation have, they come in with an open mind and a willingness to listen. And on that same thing that they, so they should also be able to express, be ready to articulate and express their concerns or express their position, and that the person on the other side or the other parties involved can do the same, and that everyone listens to them all fully. They don't have to agree with everyone. They don't have to change anybody's mind. A lot of people come into mediation feeling like, oh, well, the other party is going to finally hear what my position is and see the light. And kind of go forward. And then a lot of people end up leaving the mediation going, you know, I never understood that other person's point of view on this. Or I now understand what that other person's position and why they feel that way on it. So coming with an open mind and a willingness to listen and a willingness and ability to talk about what's important to you in it are good foundations. For a good mediation to happen.
So let's say that I've gotten all that done, and you know, I've brushed my teeth, combed my hair, and I've showed up for mediation, and we've gone through the mediation process. What would a successful mediation look like? Not me, a successful mediation. I brush my hair and brush my teeth and comb my hair, so I look pretty nice.
I imagine you will come in looking sharp and leave looking sharp. And
okay,
that's what we would
great.
Hope for everything. You know, we don't want to come to fisticuffs in any mediation. Sometimes they can be very long and very tiring, and people may look a little haggard at the end of it, but, you know, if they've, a lot of people assume that a mediation is always going to end with some kind of agreement or resolution. And that
yes.
is not always the case. And
Ooh.
That is not always a bad thing. I tell people when they ask me, oh, you know, you're a mediator, you know, how wonderful is it? How many ones have you had a great success? You know,
mm-hmm.
how many agreements have you come out with? And I always say, getting an agreement is not the primary end goal that I have when I get into a mediation. A successful
okay.
mediation may end up in a situation where people have been heard. People have clearly communicated with each other. All participants have been able to clearly communicate what's important to them, and that I have presented and created an environment that is comfortable for everybody to do that, and that they are confident that they have been able to communicate and that they have been heard.
Okay.
If a decision is made, everyone who has played a part in that decision or have a role in that decision feels confident in the decision that they've made. It's something that they've done willingly, and it's something that they feel like they can follow through on and get completed. So sometimes,
okay.
you know, you walk out and there is no decision. Yes, we're going to do this, that, or the other. We're going to pull down that sign. We're going to close or open this pool. We're going to, you know, split the furniture in the house this way. But people will have walked away knowing what the other person, hearing what the other side is, being clear about what all
mm-hmm.
the issues are and understanding. You had another podcast. You have a lot of great podcasts and a lot of wonderful
Thank
guests
you.
On. And I recall one of them was a mediator working with people about Confederate monuments.
Yes, yes. North Carolina.
Yeah. Not that I'm taking someone else's situation or story, but I think it's a wonderful example that person, and I'm sorry, I forget her name. She talked about getting feedback from people who participated in it, understanding a lot more about the point of view and the thoughts that people on the other side had about what the monuments meant to them. And
right.
why, what was important to them about those monuments and what they meant to them, which explained why they had the position that they had. And I think that is a valuable thing to have, being able to be heard and being able to understand and see other people's point of view.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's a good one. Having the opportunity, or being willing to see the other person's point of view, because sometimes it's kind of tough, you know, that other point of view may not be up your alley. It may not be the point of view that you want to hear, you know, but being willing to stay in there and listen to it or hear it and then not allow it to impact you in such a way that you can either don't give your all or you find it more difficult to move forward with whatever it is that you're going to do. But just hearing the other point of view is pretty, pretty important, I think. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think I'm not sure who that was, and I don't her name either. I was thinking maybe would if that was no, that's not. But yeah, that was a very, very good one. And, yes,
that was Christine Poulsen. That was
Christine.
Poulsen. She's the director of Resolution Virginia, and yes, she did an amazing podcast. Sorry, I just want to give that information. I'll go back on mute. This is DG.
Oh no! That was good. That was good. DG, who's the president and has oversight of NAFCOM, happened to have been on the line listening. Let me just throw it out there and ask DG if he has anything to add to what we're hearing.
What I would add is if Sharon doesn't inspire you to go volunteer to Neighborhood Mediation Center, no one else would. Sharon, you've been impressive on this call. I'm just sitting here with a huge smile on my face. That's all I want to say. If you all go back to your conversation, I want to enjoy speaking and a little learning.
Oh, well, thank you, DG. And it's nice to hear from you. DG from NAFCOM is absolutely wonderful. I mean, that's another example of how NAFCOM creates this community of mediators and things like that. I've talked before about how, they've been a wonderful resource for me. And just listening and knowing that there are other community organizations out there doing great work, like she was doing for that monument situation. You had another speaker talking about emotional intelligence and working with caregivers. NAFCOM
yes.
just recently had a couple of web lectures on being a mediator, working with caregivers and working with the elderly and all of the service providers that deal with the elderly, which is an important section and an important area that many mediators focus on, because as our population gets older and lives longer, we do use a lot of social services. There's a lot of complexity involved in how we live, and it's very important that the person you're caring for has a voice and a say in how that all gets done. So that, that was a wonderful resource for me to do that webcast and have that extra little bit of knowledge and intelligence about that focused segment of the population that I could possibly be doing mediations with.
I was just saying, if I say I'm surprised, I'm just kind of always surprised at the many ways that mediation itself is being used or could be used or can be used, within the various communities out there. And as we've said many, many times on the show, it is one of the best kept secrets, and I don't know why we're still keeping a secret. I'm trying to do my part to get that secret out of the closet, so that more and more people are aware and more people make use of that practice. And I call it a practice. It's sort of like, when someone goes to med school and come out as a doctor, they practice, medicine, or an attorney practice law, someone that completes their mediation training, they practice mediation. So I see mediation as a practice, and one that, is really one that I think people should, seek out, but somehow or another, the word doesn't get around as much as it should. So from your perspective, what do you think that we can do? And I say we, meaning anyone who's listening to the show, anyone who has ever heard about mediation or community mediation, what can we do to make a bigger impact in terms of getting it more well known in the community, whatever the communities are? What can we do, we the lay people, not necessarily the professional, they're probably doing all they can, what we the lay people might be able to do? Give me one or two things you think.
Well, one, I think, having great people behind us like you who have podcasts that talk about, the resources that are out there for the community and how mediation is a strong resource for it. People who are out there in the community who are, acting as mediators or doing mediation activities, small m, as part of their greater work. People who are administrators in social service agencies, people who are attorneys, who think to do mediation before things escalate and they work through situations that way. Schools are a wonderful resource, and the administration of schools are great at helping the students mediate their own programs mediate their own issues and resolve their own conflicts. We've had programs with high schools and college levels. Support your local community organization. Many of the local community organizations provide mediators, and they also do training. So even though you may not think I'm going to become a professional mediator, the mediation skills play a part in so many different lines of work. It is always a good thing to have. So if it's something you find yourself doing, feel free to check in with your local mediation program and update your skills a little bit in certain areas so that you feel more confident doing these things. And as you're out there in your community and you talk with people, with coworkers, with families, with friends that come to you and complain about an issue that's gotten too big or gnarly for them to handle, remember, this is a resource that you can have someone come in and help you work through it. Many of the mediation programs will offer these services at little or no charge. It's a viable option to get to a good, clean resolution for something that everyone feels confident in.
Well, you mentioned that everyone feels confident in it. It brings up a thought, or I heard a statement from someone. We were talking about mediation, and they actually indicated that they were sort of afraid of mediation because they didn't know that much about it. They thought it was, you know, sort of like going to court and having someone sort of, you know, this strange person, this person that has this power over you to tell you this is what you should do and so forth and so on. So for that individual, there was this fear that they had that mediators are decision makers, I guess. That was what their thought was, and they kind of wanted no part of that. They just didn't understand it. So is there an opportunity for people to just kind of, you know, become more familiar with the process without necessarily going to mediation?
I'd have to think about that. I know at every turn when I talk about mediation, I do just that. I talk about how that it is very different from arbitration or facilitation. And, you know, I am always open to listening whenever somebody says, oh, I did mediation and it went horribly. And I'll say, well, why do you feel like it went horribly? And say, you know, okay, well, what you thought was mediation was probably more an arbitration, because there are many contracts out there that require arbitration in an effort to resolve a situation, and you end up in a situation like I described. You have the the customer and a phalanx of attorneys from the business there. And I can understand how they feel like that was not useful. When we do this in court, which many, you know, community mediation programs are involved in the courts that I work in, we have a very good relationship with the clerks and court personnel. They allow us to give our little introduction that explains what mediation is. You know, it's voluntary. It is self-determined. You are the ones that get to make a decision on how this is resolved. It's confidential. You know, we as mediators don't repeat anything to anyone. So, you know, you get to have, as one person describes it, a second bite at the apple, where you get to sit down and talk with each other and figure out what you want to do and how you want to resolve this. And as long as it meets all the required laws, the court okays it, and you are on your way on something that you feel comfortable with. And in our court system, if they end up not coming up with an agreement, their case can still be heard by a judge that same day. So they don't
get a third bite at the apple.
Right. They don't feel forced to have to come up with an agreement in mediation. You try it. If it feels uncomfortable, one, if it feels uncomfortable, I want to know why and fix it. Or if it doesn't work for you, that's fine. Then you can have your case heard by a court. My goal is that it's self-determined. You get an agreement. If you get an agreement, it's an agreement that you want it and that you are comfortable with and you feel like you can do.
Well,
so we get the
Sharon,
opportunity to stand up and say that in court when we do the cases in court. So.
Well, that's good. That's good. Sharon, I'm going to say it this way. I feel a little bit better now by going out and playing in that sandbox or playing with others. Because if the others I play with are going to be playing by the same rules or the same or have the same tools that you just shared with us, well, we can have fun with this, you know, or not so much fun, but we can feel comfortable going through the process. And so I see that as a great tool, and that's a great way to share it, tools to help you work and play well with others. I just think that's a good approach to a topic that some people find very, you know, sometimes frightening to them. But as you point out, it's a tool, and when used properly, when used well, it helps both parties become satisfied with the results of or the outcome of whatever it is that, you know, they may be in conflict over. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it. Yes.
Well, thank you
yes.
for giving me the opportunity to talk about it.
Oh, absolutely. So any last words of wisdom, thoughts that you might want to share with our folks before we go off the air?
Oh, no. I've just had a wonderful time talking about it from my point of view and talking about what I think is great. And I enjoy doing it, and I will keep doing it as long as I am productive and helpful to people. And I think a lot of people can go out and either make use of that or either become a mediator and help other people in their own community.
Well, thank you, Sharon. Thanks, Sharon. Really appreciate it. You just heard from Sharon Armour, and I said Armour. I like saying Armour. She says it's Armour. So we just heard from Sharon Armour. She's an excellent mediator. She's up in the I'm going to call it the Northeast, the Massachusetts area. But she's a member of NAFCM, NAFCM, a National Association for Community Mediation. We also had an opportunity to hear from the president himself. No, not Donald J. Trump, but DG. And DG, thanks for, you know, taking a moment and stepping in and saying hello. I appreciate that. So we're always open. We're always open to having NAFCM on. And remember, NAFCM has their own time slot. It's the last Monday of each month, with the exception of today. Today was sort of a makeup. They were supposed to have been on like last Monday, so I apologize for that. But we got them on this Monday. We always want to have NAFCM on because they provide a great service in the community, and we need more community mediation centers. So wherever you are, if there's not a community mediation center in your area, hey, start lobbying, start talking to someone, and give the folks at NAFCM a call. Just look them up on the website, NAFCM.org. That's NAFCM.org. Pretty sure they'll be happy to hear from you. So wherever there is not a community mediation center and you want one, well, talk to NAFCM. They'll see about giving you all of the 411 on what you need to do to get a community mediation center going in your area. So this is Dr. Hank saying thanks for being with us. Really appreciate the time that you spent with us today. And we'll be back next week. We'll be back next week for another exciting show. That exciting show will feature another guest from another area. It will not be NAFCM this time, but some other area around EI or some other area that is closely related to EI. So stay with us. We'll be back next week, same time, same place. And oh, yes, I have another book signing coming up July 26th in Orlando, Florida, at the Florida Hotel and Conference Center from 6 to 8 p.m. My new book, it's titled EQ is for Everyone. So I hope to see you there. If you have any questions about any of those things, just send me an email to eqisforeveryone@gmail.com. That's eqisforeveryone@gmail.com. So everyone, go out and have an EI afternoon. Bye now.